Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow at the Forum, and I'll serve as Chair. Today we welcome Ephraim Inbar, a Shulman Ginsberg Writing Fellow at the Middle East Forum and a Professor of Political Science at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. Professor Inbar is Director of Bar-Ilan's Beza Center, the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies, and is a leading authority on national security problems in the Middle East. He'll be briefing us today on the third Gaza war Hamas has launched against Israel. In Professor Inbar's recent article, What is to be done about Gaza, he analyzed Israel's options regarding Hamas, where solutions are difficult and managing the conflict may be the end result. With the current 72-hour truce in place, the outcome of the Cairo negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians remains to be seen. Will anything less than demilitarization of Hamas result in a win for the terror organization? Let's begin. Professor Inbar?
Well, to your question, I'm not sure I have an answer. Much depends what will happen in Cairo. Indeed, I think that now we are at a crossroads, and much will depend upon Hamas, primarily Hamas decisions, and if they'll continue with the truce or not, and if they'll agree to a long-term ceasefire, which is the Israeli goal in this campaign. It's a very limited political goal. I think that it's quite clear that Israel didn't go into Gaza or didn't attack targets in Gaza to uproot Hamas. This is basically the expression of a very patient strategy of attrition against Hamas, what Israelis call mowing the grass, in which we basically focus on debilitating, destroying the terrorist infrastructure. And this is what has been done in the last months. We destroyed rocket launchers, the production of rockets factories. We took care of the tunnels. You know, in parentheses, I think the danger of the tunnels it was somewhat exaggerated because tunnels can do only limited damage in contrast to rockets, who, even if they don't hit a target because of the successful Iron Dome, still, everybody runs for cover and creates, you know, a great threat to the Israeli routine, and it also paralyzed for a day or two the Israel's international airport, which is a strategic goal. We've seen so far that Hamas went to Cairo on Egyptian terms. But unfortunately, it seems that they do not feel enough pain, and war is about exacting pain. And eventually, this will be the main factor to the question who wins the war. If they feel enough pain, they'll agree. If not, they'll continue to fight until we exact greater pain or lose the war. Patient strategy of attrition was useful in garnering great domestic support. I think in this war we've seen great strengths on part of the home front. There is great social resilience in Israel. And nowadays I think most Israelis feel that the job was left unfinished and a majority of Israelis support escalation going into Gaza and exacting a higher cost from Hamas. There is obviously a diplomatic clock, and initially we got a lot of international support, which gradually dissipates. If I'm asked what we should do if Hamas starts fire again, probably an escalation. Maybe a few words about the regional arena. The key actor is Egypt. Only Egypt and Israel border Gaza, and Egypt is the most important Arab country. And fortunately for us, we have a friend now there that is taking care of its own interests, not Israeli interests. Assisi sees, as we all know, Hamas as a terrorist organization, And if we don't do the job, you know, as we sometimes hope, we have to rely on the Arabs to do it, and Egypt is tougher on Hamas than we are. Unfortunately, the Americans didn't realize the importance of Egypt, and they actually conducted a very misguided policy in trying to get a ceasefire involving Turkey and Qatar, and I'm not sure that until this very day that Egypt is the key. Just to update you, Assisi went to Saudi Arabia, and from there it goes to Moscow. And if the Americans continue with this type of policy of estrangement from Egypt, we may see the Russians back in Russia, basically changing an important achievement of the Americans by Kissinger in the 70s. I want to say about a few words about the military aspect. What we've seen is something that actually the Bessa Center warned about, a neglect of the ground forces. We didn't have enough armed personnel carriers. Our tanks and APCs were not equipped with enough TROPHY, which is an anti-missile system. And we've seen that particularly the reserves were not trained enough, and this shows if they have to fight. This time, Hamas fought much better than in 2009. Although every encounter, Israel was victorious. And we have a slight problem. I don't think we should exaggerate the tunnel problem, the subterranean military struggle, which, again, we didn't train enough. But this is something that probably can be overcome if we'll put our minds to it. And we've seen already, you know, ad hoc doctrinal changes in Israeli fighting units to deal with this type of threat. Generally, the feeling in Israel is, as I mentioned, that Israel didn't capitalize on this opportunity to give Hamas a strong enough blow. And I think this is also reflected in Hamas behavior when it goes to Cairo and makes demands upon Israel. And basically, we'll have to see what happens tomorrow. We have to be patient. And hopefully, our government will know what to do in order to assure that this round of violence ends with an Israeli victory, because it's important not only the bilateral Israeli-Hamas relations, but also this encounter has wider implications in terms of deterrence. Everybody in the Middle East is looking at us, and the Israeli patient and reluctant use of force is registered everywhere, and this does not is not a good thing for Israeli deterrence. So we are in the middle of it, maybe at the end, and we have to wait, you know, a few days more and to see how it ends. Thank you.
Thank you. The question and answer period will now begin, and we invite your participation. Please note that when there are no questions in the queue, the moderator will ask a question. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when your line is unmuted. And please remember that if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you are selected to ask your question. So once again, to join the question and answer session queue, just press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll take our first question now. Please go ahead with your question.
Me?
Yes, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, this is Orna Shulman, a close friend of Dorit Wertheim, and I have lots of respect for your opinion and your prescient views. My question is...
Thank you.
My question relates to this as a proxy war and your interpretation of its impact, or if not impact, the instigation by Iran, and having to do with the larger hegemon picture in the Middle East.
Frankly, I'm not sure that Iran is that much involved. There was tension between Iran and Hamas because Hamas didn't support Assad in Syria and had to leave the headquarters from Syria, and it's now basically stationed in Qatar, its leadership in Qatar, and most of its money comes from Qatar. Iran, apart from that, is busy closer at home in Iraq. Having said that, obviously that Iran is interested in weakening in Israel and tries to help Hamas as much as possible. Now it's more difficult because of Egypt. Egypt prevented humanitarian aid from Iran going through Gaza, going to Gaza.
Thank you for your question. And we'll take our next caller now. Go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, my name is Margot Einstein. I'm from Newton, Massachusetts.
Hi, Dr.
Inbara. You said that most Israelis feel that the job was left unfinished. Is it possible just to go in and finish it off, finish off Hamas? I think that's what most right-feeling people believe would be the way to go.
I don't think that Israelis are thinking in terms of finishing off Hamas. They are thinking in destroying the military wing of Hamas and trying to capture and kill as many as possible Hamas military leaders. I must say that I do not share the view that Hamas can be fully destroyed because it is a well-rooted organization in Palestinian society. At least 35% of Palestinians favor Hamas. Actually, now Hamas is even more popular because it fights Israel. And it is an organization you just cannot eliminate. It has a very serious civilian wing that provides services to the people, education, not the type of education we want for our children, but they do. They are seen as more honest than the Palestinian Authority leadership. So this is something that unfortunately will be there. Radical Islam is part of the Middle East, and it's not going to disappear, neither in among the Palestinian, nor in Syria, Iraq, or even Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Dr. Inbar.
You are welcome.
Thank you for your question. And we'll take our next caller now. Please go ahead when you hear that your line has been unmuted. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, this is Bernard Leventhal. Doctor, two things. Number one, would you repeat where the reserves were not well trained? I'm not sure I completely understood that. And the second thing is, how significant was the number of Israeli casualties to the public? In the past, they've had to pull out of certain situations because the casualty level was relatively high for the size of the country. And I'm wondering how the population feels about that issue today.
Well, the reserves didn't train because of budgetary cuts. And in contrast to 2009, when all units trained on models before going into Gaza, this time it didn't happen. So they came, they were called, and they had to go to train a little bit. And if they went in, they went without prior training. In terms of casualties, the casualty number, as you all know, is over 60. And it, you know, of course it hurts, but it does not make a dent in Israeli willingness to fight against its enemies. I think this is part of the great social resilience of the Israeli society. And by the way, this is not true only today. Since 2006, I remember at least those polls showed that Israelis were ready to continue to fight, knowing very well that it entails additional casualties. I think casualties is not an issue. Despite what people sometimes tell you, Israelis are ready to fight, to sacrifice. Mothers send their children to the military, knowing well that what it might happen. This is not a factor. I think what we see is a reluctance to use the military by the political level and also the highest military level.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you You're for welcome. Your question. And we'll take our next caller now. Please go ahead when you hear that your line has been unmuted. Go ahead with your question, please.
Professor, this is Janet Derflinger. Thank you very much for your remarks. I want to go back to the Iran issue. Do you think that, in your opinion, do you think Israel is planning or possibly planning to take any action against Iran's nuclear facilities? And do you think when they're trying to figure out what to do about Hamas now, that's a consideration?
Of course, I don't know exactly what Israel is going to do. You know, I'm not a prophet, and this type of decisions are made in a very small forum. And I can tell you what the Iranians probably think. Looking at the Israeli caution in its encounter with Hamas, they probably think that this government doesn't have the stomach to try to eliminate the nuclear infrastructure in Iran, which is, of course, an entirely different operation, but it carries more risks, and endangers the main Israeli component of its military force, which is the Air Force. So the Middle Easterners, looking at what we are doing in Gaza, are less worried about Israeli willingness to use force against them.
Okay, that's a partial answer. Thanks.
Thank you for your question. And we'll go ahead with our next caller now. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, hi, this is Richard Irving. Thank you very much, Professor, for your words. And I would appreciate if you could comment on something a number of Israelis have said to me regarding if Hamas is sufficiently weakened in Gaza that a more radical group such as ISIS could potentially take over there. Do you think it's viable that Hamas could be displaced by something worse? Or, on the other hand, potentially by the Palestinian administration minus Hamas?
I don't think that there is a danger of Hamas being replaced by a more radical organization, because Hamas, as I pointed out, is an organization that has widespread support it is relatively strong. It rules in a very efficient way. It's ruthless enough to command the respect of all Gazans. And for that, you don't need missiles and rockets and tunnels. You just need pistols and rifles and, of course, ruthlessness. I doubt very much if the Palestinian Authority will be able to gain much influence in Gaza. Maybe we'll see a presence of the Palestinian Authority at the Rafiah, at the Rafah crossing. But in my view, if Abu Mazen dares to come to Gaza, his life will be very short. And I don't think he volunteers to come to Gaza and to take Gaza. I didn't hear the Palestinian Authority saying anything about their forces entering Gaza because they know exactly what might happen. Probably a repeat of 2007 when Hamas or when Hamas people throw the Fatah people out of the windows of the high rises in Gaza. So actually, probably what will happen, even a weakened Hamas, politically will be this more of the same. We should remember that Hamas ruling in Gaza divides the Palestinian national movement. It further, points out that the disability of the Palestinian national movement establishing a state, and not sure it's so bad for the Jews. What we want is calm, and if they deliver calm, we don't care who rules Gaza.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you for your question, and we'll take our next caller now. Please go ahead.
Dr. Imbar, this is Larry Gould from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi.
Thank you for your insight. I have a two-part question. The demands of Hamas in the current talks are so strong, it's as if they were victorious. Are the Hamas people and the Gazan people so committed to the Islamic attitude toward Jews that they will never admit to defeat and accept Jews as neighbors?
It's obvious that with the type of education that we see in Gaza, that we see in the Palestinian Authority, and even in Egypt and Jordan, they don't want Jews to be their neighbors. What we see in recent years, this is a historic process, that part of the Arab leadership is pragmatic enough, understands that it cannot eradicate the Jewish state, and tries to build a modus vivendi with this power, which is here to stay. So Hamas, in particular, is very much committed to the destruction of the state of Israel, and the most it is capable is of a hudna, and which is in accordance with Islamic teachings. They are capable to manipulate the holy texts to produce a long-term truce with Israel. This they are capable, but it depends upon the realization that they are weak and they'll pay a heavy price if they violate the ceasefire.
My second question is, can this current, quote, friendship, unquote, between Saudi Arabia and Israel develop into something permanent, or is it just temporary?
I'm not sure it's temporary, because we have the same enemies. It's Hamas, of course, but the more significant enemy is, of course, Iran. And the most we probably can get from the Iranians is some kind of informal, close relationship, some kind of what we call a mistress syndrome, but not any formal relationship. I don't think they are ready for a Israeli flag in Riyadh or anything like that. If we attack Iran and send the checks, they'll pay it. But I don't think that we should expect this kingdom, which is very religious, very Muslim, to bring itself to the type of relations that we have with Jordan or with Egypt. So it's a long way to that.
Thank you for your insight.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. And we'll take our next question now.
Dr. Embora, this is Bill Seltzer in Philadelphia. Hamas is being financed out of Qatar, and I would assume geographically at least Qatar would be in the purview of Saudi Arabia. I don't know if Qatar is, I presume they must be Shiite, but certainly...
No, it's Sunni. It is Sunni.
It is Sunni. And Hamas is, what is Hamas?
Sunni as well.
Ah, I had that wrong. So Saudi Arabia would be, if anything, a supporter or a silent supporter of Hamas.
No. Actually, Saudi Arabia is not a supporter of Hamas. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, the Gulf states, with the exception of Qatar, see the Muslim Brothers as a threat to the regime and are actually in the same strategic boat with Israel, not only on the Hamas issue, but also on the issue of Iran. And unfortunately, the Americans also do not get it and are try to make Turkey and Qatar, that both support Hamas, more prominent actors in the Middle East, which the Egyptians, the Saudis, of course, do not like.
What is Turkey's interest in Hamas, and why would they be supporting them?
Turkey, for the last decade, has changed. Turkey, under Erdogan, who was just elected as president, is motivated by Islamist impulses and neo-Ottoman dreams, and wants to play a larger role in the Middle East, and plays the anti-Israeli card. And they are trying to be the champion of the resistance to Israel. And Hamas is a resistance. Hamas actually runs some of their operations from Turkey. A clear result of the new policy of Turkey is the deterioration in Turkish-Israeli relations.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very edifying. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I had a great plan to sell Hamas to Saudi Arabia.
I'm not sure there'll be many buyers. They want them dead.
Thank you for your question. And we'll take one final question now. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yes, Professor Embar, this is Marilyn Stern, moderator. The question I have for you is, you had mentioned ending in your article about the importance of the Palestinians changing their education system, that there really will be no end to any conflict until that occurs. Much has been made of it, and if after mowing the grass this round, Hamas is looking to translate some of their gains into a political achievement, how likely do you think it is that our negotiators will make that a priority in the current negotiations that are going on?
Even if they make changing education in Gaza or in the Palestinian Authority a priority, I don't think that we have a chance in the near future to change our education system. Changes must in the Arab world must come from within, And only when there will be a new leadership, a more pragmatic leadership, a more humane leadership, a more pro-Western leadership in those Arab countries, we will see less hatred, less anti-Semitism, less Jewish stereotypes in Arab schools. And even if we'll see less, the changes will take generations, unfortunately.
Well, thank you for your analysis and your comments, and we'd like to thank our participants for calling in and for Professor Inbal's participation. This concludes our conference call.